Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Andrew P. Shea. Andy, we're in that period between end of regular season, heading towards the college conference championship games. And then very quickly thereafter, we'll start to see where everybody is going to go bowling. How are you doing this week, sir?
I'm doing great, Jimmy. How are you? Hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Hope everybody else out there did the same as you go back to getting the full swing of the holiday season going back this week. But yeah, it was a fun weekend of college football. It was quote-unquote rivalry weekend is how they tab it, but there were some really fun football games to watch.
There were, and it was really just about survival last week. And
right.
The craziest game being that Alabama-Auburn game. Fourth
Stupid.
Down and goal from the 31, and they somehow find a way to score. That's just crazy.
That's lucky. That's lucky. There's no other way to put it, right? Like, it was a great throw. It was a desperation toss, and they got lucky. Sometimes you have to be lucky, Jimmy. You know what I mean? You do. Luck. Sometimes you have to be a little bit lucky. You make your own luck, but you put yourself in fourth and goal at the 31. That's, you know, you have to make some luck when that happens. So, but it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. Auburn gave them a full snootful.
And you know what's even crazier, Andy, is if they can beat Georgia this week, that play could be the difference between them making the playoffs or not. They're still alive to be a national champion, and if that were to happen, they'd have to look back at that play. But anyway, let's take a look at things from the Penn State perspective. We've got the last regular season college football rankings are out. Georgia, Michigan, Washington, and Florida State, the four undefeated teams, are 1-4. No surprise there, although some people think Florida State has not, you know, qualified under the eye test, plus losing their starting quarterback. The Penn State Nittany Lions come in at number 10. Andy, is that an appropriate place for them?
I feel it's at the very least appropriate. I kind of lean to maybe they're a little bit, a spot or two, maybe too high. They could be 11 or 12, but that's nitpicking a little bit. Really impressive win against Michigan State across the board. Despite, you know, what the offense did and helped its, you know, sort of image a little bit with what the game they put up there. That defense continues to play at a championship, amazing championship level, and that's what they're known for. They're known as a defensive team. I mean, they're second among the two lost teams, Jimmy, right? That Alabama, who we just talked about, they're eighth. They are eighth right now. Penn State is 10th. Alabama's 11-1. Penn State's 10-2. They're second behind Missouri among the two lost teams. Yeah, I think that's about right. I don't think they're the quote-unquote best two-loss team out there. And the reason I say that is I struggle in their competitiveness in the big games that they lost. The scores said one thing, but the games weren't really competitive in terms of a contest where you thought Penn State was going to have a say in the outcome of the game. I never felt like they were in a position to think that they were going to have a positive outcome or could impact the outcome of each one of those games. It was particularly from the offense. It was all about the offensive side of the ball and the inability to, you know, function at a, how shall I put this gently, to function at a acceptable FBS Power 5 offense collegiate level. They were just dreadful pretty much offensively in both of those games. So, you know, I think the fact they're a New Year's Six team with two losses and number 10 in the country, I think that's about as good as it gets. Because the rest of their schedule, they handled the rest of their schedule pretty well.
Andy, my nitpick with your evaluation is I think you fell under the same influence that has hit the national media in watching those two games against Michigan and Ohio State. And I think Penn State gets unfairly punished for the poor effort by the offense when you had such an overwhelming elite performance all year from the defense. My reason for saying that is I think if they had lost those games instead of, 20-13 or whatever, within a score, low scoring, if they had lost at 47-40, people probably would not have been as critical. No one would have been saying, oh, that woeful defense. So I think that's a little bit unfair. But looking at the two lost teams, and I get your point about it's probably a nitpick when you look at Missouri, Penn State, Ole Miss, Oklahoma. I'll stick, though, with Missouri, Penn State, and Ole Miss. If I look at, Missouri, their two losses were to number one Georgia, 30-21. I'd have to say probably comparable to the Penn State losses, and that was on the road at Georgia. And then they lost to number 13 LSU, so they have the worst loss between the two teams. Their best win was against Tennessee, ranked number 21. Penn State's best win was against Iowa, ranked number 16. And, you could probably argue they were comparable wins, so it's pretty close. Also, though, Missouri had several close calls. Do you know that they have four one-score wins?
They do.
Against a Florida team that has a losing record against Memphis.
Yep.
But here was another one. They had a one-score game, I think it was a field goal or maybe a touchdown, against MTSU. Do you know who MTSU is, Andy?
Middle Tennessee State University?
Yes, it is. And
thank
I
you.
Had to look it up. I had to look it up.
But
a one-score win against Middle Tennessee. So, that is nitpicking, but Ole Miss could argue, though, they have also a win against LSU as their best win. They also have a win against Tulane. So, I think at the end of the day, Andy, I'm not going to go crazy over those three teams. It's unfortunate, though, the huge difference in the appearance of being in a New Year's Six Bowl versus not.
That is optics wise, that is massive. You are correct. It is. And I think, I understand your nitpicks. I will say this: Penn State's defense is the reason it's a top 10 team, right? Like, I'll flip this, go from a different lens. Why is Penn State a top 10 team when they got beat pretty soundly by Ohio State and Michigan? Because they have the best, if not one of the best, if not the best, defense in the country. You can't argue that. So I think all of the Q rating that this team is getting and they're going to be in a New Year's Six Bowl, I think it's a large, large majority is it based on what this defense has accomplished throughout this season.
No doubt. A lot of it is on the defense, and I think they could even get more credit for what they did there. All right, other news items I'd like to hit up with you, Andy. I thought it was interesting after the Michigan State game. A lot of the Penn State fans so disappointed in the results this year, but after Michigan State, some of that talk was, gee, if you're Drew Aller, would you want to stick around for this team? If you're Nick Singleton, a very underwhelming type season going into that Michigan State game. And they were both asked about returning next season, and both emphatically said, yes, they will be back. How significant is that?
I'm sorry, what was that, Jimmy? I missed your question.
Well, both Drew Aller and Nick Singleton. Pay attention, Andy. Pay attention.
I am paying attention.
Drew Aller and Nick Singleton both confirmed they're coming back next year. My question is, how significant is that?
Thank you, Jimmy. I appreciate it. Don't punish me for my bad hearing. So I think it is significant because, you know, the transfer portal is a place to, you can also make more money. Let's be honest with you. NIL money in the transfer portal for high end players is pretty good when you're moving to another school. But for Penn State's significance, it sort of solidifies what the problem was, that these guys are still committed to, for right now, to the program, to the head coach. I mean, we started chirping about it maybe after the Northwestern game, maybe a wee bit from Illinois, gave them a little pass, but we were like, what the heck is going on? This offense looks like it just went like off the side of a cliff in 8 quarters. They got rid of the problem. James Franklin got rid of what was clearly a very big problem on their coaching staff, and it was manifesting itself on the field, which was the offensive coordinator. So in some ways I took it as sort of them saying, yeah, we're committed to staying here. We're going to, you know, see where this goes next year. And we want to, you know, take another shot with this offense. The flip side of it is, and I think this is also, you know, that's the Penn State fan side of it. And I'm just saying it's not relevant for fans because they want to feel like they're committed to our school. They love Penn State and all that. I get that. That is probably true. But the other side of it is both of them are NFL prospects and they only have one more year of, you know, eligibility before they can go to the NFL or declare themselves eligible for the NFL. So the thing is, do you want to deal with the transfer and trying to start at another school and all that comes with that when you're not unhappy at that school, because literally you pretty much have one more season and then that's it and then you're done. So I think that's the flip side for me.
And I think that we as fans have to respect that oftentimes this is a business decision, and I'm not saying that in a negative way. I'm saying it in a positive way. You have to look at this as if this were your son and his future is at stake here when they start to think about a transfer and the opportunities that might come with that. Andy, I have one final thought on that, which we will pick up when we start quarter number two, so stay tuned. This is Jim from the Keystone Sports Network. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all our loyal listeners. As we approach the football offseason, a reminder that we will be here year-round talking Penn State football with all your old favorites, Dustin, T. Frank, Andy, and Jeff, along with newcomers Landon and Sean. But that's not all. We plan on bringing you new shows on our podcast format where we take a more in-depth look at not only Penn State football, but also the other Penn State sports. So be sure to download our app, Keystone Sports.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
StateCollege.com is your one-stop source for news, sports, opinion, entertainment, and community events. Over a decade of experience covering the Nittany Lions from reporter Ben Jones. Lively commentary from columnist Mike Poorman and others. Local perspective, local expertise, local information from Penn State's hometown website, StateCollege.com. TrustStateCollege.com for daily coverage of the school, team, and place you love.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy, I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football. And Andy, we finished up the first segment talking about Drew Allard, Nick Singleton, both making a commitment for next year to Penn State. Again, it's another verbal commitment, and things could change. You know, they could change their mind right next week. We all know that. But I think it was significant, and I think another part, especially Drew Allard, when he talked about being committed, he talked about James Franklin. And I think a lot of folks were concerned that his commitment in coming to Penn State was about Mike Yurcich. Mike Yurcich was the one who scouted him, brought him here. But I think it was also significant, his commitment to James Franklin. I was not surprised to hear that, because I had, you know, heard before that he has a good relationship with James Franklin. But I think that's also good for the Penn State fans to hear that this team, these players at Penn State, do feel that way about James Franklin. And I think that gets lost in the shuffle sometimes, and I think it is important.
You're 100% right, Jimmy. You are 100% right. One of James's strengths, he is an elite recruiter in college football, one of the top five best, and that's not up for debate. He's great with, you know, the parents, the grandparents on that recruiting trail. That's all part of it. One strength that I think gets overlooked at times is he is relational with his players and establishes relationships that are personal, that you could say, wow, they feel personal to the players. They are personal. There is a way that he manages relationships with people, particularly his players, that appeals to them. And it isn't the first time you've heard this. And that's really important, because then you look at these players and they're, you know, we're talking about Nick Singleton and Drew Allard confirming, you know, their commitment to Penn State on this. When you think about that, how many guys have entered the transfer portal that didn't make sense, or you were like, hey, boy, that one's going to leave a mark, or that hurts? Penn State's one of those programs where I'd say they haven't lost a key player to the transfer portal. And I think relationships are part of the equation of what leads to that decision.
I think that's true. And the players are comfortable here. They're comfortable. Hey, they always talk about the family atmosphere at Penn State. And I think this is another example of it. Now, despite the family atmosphere, there may be some changes at the coaching staff. We know the team is already looking for a new offensive coordinator. They may be looking for a new defensive coordinator. We've talked about this all along, Andy, that Manny Diaz would like to be a head coach again. And finally, we get the first rumor that has Manny Diaz involved. And I think it's funny, because we had talked about Duke prior to his name being attached there. And is this a logical place for Manny Diaz? Is it a good enough job? Before I get your take on it, I think, you know, we need to point out the strengths. It's in the ACC, where, you know, Manny Diaz is familiar, kind of approaching the Southeast, where he probably has recruiting connections. Duke is not a, you know, it's not a terrible program. They've shown that they could win, Andy. So the question, it's no guarantee he's going to be offered that job. I'm not even sure he's the favorite, but is that a good enough job? If you're in Manny Diaz's shoes, do you say, hey, Duke is a place I'd like to be?
Yeah, that's a tough question to answer. As I look at Manny Diaz, the defensive coordinator, what is not lateral? Now, any head coaching position is going to be a step up from being coordinator, because you're in charge. But when you've been a head coach at the University of Miami, and now you've been a defensive coordinator at Penn State, are you taking a step backwards by going to a Duke that is a program now that is sort of their 500, maybe a win or two above 500 type program, done some really good work in the transfer portal. They've brought some really good talent into that program via the transfer portal, and they've used that really well to their as an asset for them. They're still a middle of the road ACC program. They were a doormat, right, Jimmy? Now they're not a doormat per se. It's still a basketball school, right? That is a priority. That I think that is a little bit of a factor is, you know, Duke in Durham, Duke is a basketball school. What is the job that would appeal to Manny Diaz, you know, as a college head coach? And I'm not so sure, this is just me speaking, Jimmy. I'm not so sure Manny Diaz isn't, he would be a really interesting NFL defensive coordinator. I think he could coordinate a defense in the NFL. I think that is a factor as well. Will he go to the NFL, not just look to become another college head coach? Although he himself has said he would, you know, dearly love the opportunity to coach again. So it depends on how bad he wants to be a head coach. How bad does he feel? And does he feel like he's sort of put himself in a position to be a better head coach than he was before? That's up to him. Is Duke the right job? I don't know. I think the right job is whatever Manny Diaz thinks is if he's ready or not to be a head coach again. I think Duke, if he says, yes, I'm ready, I'm in a good position, my timing is right, I am ready to be a head coach again, then I think Duke will be a job that he would take.
You know, it depends on what his priorities are.
Yep.
Does he want to win the national championship? He's not going to win that at Duke.
Right.
Job security, though, you mentioned Duke being a basketball school. I look at Stoops in at Kentucky, obviously a basketball school there. He could probably coach there for the rest of his life if he wants to. He's paid
Correct.
Very well. He's never going to win a national championship at Kentucky. He's never going to win a Southeast Conference championship at Kentucky. But the standards are set in a different kind of way. So
right.
How important is that? Or is Duke, you know, he could he's coming off a head coaching job at Miami where it was not a great result there. Does he need to rehab his head coaching resume where if he goes to Duke, has winning seasons, that would be enough to get him into one of the premier jobs when they become available? So I think that's part of the discussion, Andy.
I don't think it's out of the realm as well for one of the, you know, elite hammers, and Penn State's, you know, second tier in terms of elite in the country. I don't think it's unrealistic for a, you know, an Alabama type or a Georgia or, you know, one of those type schools, you know, Ohio State, even, for example, as a defensive coordinator. I mean, look what he's done as you go back to his, you know, at Miami as a coordinator, and I knew he was really good there. I mean, he's done nothing but be elite as a Power 5 Big Ten college football defensive coordinator. Are other schools going to, you know, throw more money at him and try and get him to make a, you know, sort of lateral move position-wise and be a defensive coordinator at a team that is going to, you know, be relevant for the national championship? I don't know. Is that a factor as well? I haven't ever thought about it until just now. I was like, will somebody else grab him up because he's that good, right?
I don't know, because I think he's got a pretty good situation at Penn State. Good talent here. It appears that he has a very good relationship with James Franklin. I understand the, you know, if an Alabama comes calling, and could they pay him more money to be their defensive coordinator? But is that enough of a step up? I think
right.
He's already proven what he could do as a coordinator. I think the next position for him has to be head coach, Andy. And
okay.
So I don't picture that. You know, might someone just throw a boatload of money at him to do it? Yeah, I guess that's possible. But My question though is, in deciding, say, for the Duke position, if it were to be offered to him, in making that decision, how many of the really big jobs come open? Okay. And sometimes you have, like, for example, Notre Dame came open. They promoted an assistant. A few years ago, the Ohio State job comes open. They hired the assistant. They didn't go outside. So when is the job, those big jobs, going to come open, and when might they? And that's, you know, if you're a Manny Diaz or anybody else in these coaching circles, you've got to say, you know what? There's only a handful of really good coaching jobs out there. When a head coaching opportunity comes up, maybe I need to take it.
Yeah, I mean, there's only a few elite programs. I mean, does he roll the dice and think he could be a candidate for the job at the University of Florida? Are they going to give, you know, are they going to give, they get another year out of Napier? I don't know. I think he's in an advantageous position, but I think he has some serious decisions to make. And you're right, Penn State is a really good place for him because, you know, and he has a great relationship with James because, well, he's earned it, but James kind of lets him do what he wants to do with the defense, right? Like, you haven't heard, even from the very beginning, James ever saying anything but Manny Diaz is such a quality coach and, you know, he knows more about defense than I forgot. So, and James has given him that autonomy, not like exclusively saying he doesn't do anything with the defense because he's still the head coach, but Manny Diaz has had every opportunity to coordinate this defense completely in his likeness and image. And that's a credit to Franklin for letting him doing that. Is that good enough for him? That's an interesting part for me too.
You know, is it good enough for him? I don't think there's any doubt with the right opportunity he would move on. So the question becomes, what is that right opportunity and what level? You mentioned Florida. You and I had talked about this earlier in the week, obviously off the air, and we both came to that conclusion. A school like Florida, you know, that checks all the boxes. It's back home for him, home state of Florida. It's obviously a place where you could win a national championship. You could have the resources that you need to compete that way. You know, a Florida, a Tennessee, an LSU, those kind of schools have that. Yep. I'm not sure Duke has that. Maybe it doesn't matter. All right, Andy, that is it for quarter number two. We'll wrap this up and then go on to quarter three, where we take your questions and we ask Andy. Stay tuned. This is Jim from the Keystone Sports Network. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all our loyal listeners. As we approach the football offseason, a reminder that we will be here year-round talking Penn State football with all your old favorites, Dustin, T. Frank, Andy, and Jeff, along with newcomers, Landon and Sean. But that's not all. We plan on bringing you new shows on our podcast format, where we take a more in-depth look at not only Penn State football, but also the other Penn State sports. So be sure to download our app, Keystone Sports.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
StateCollege.com is your one-stop source for news, sports, opinion, entertainment, and community events. Over a decade of experience covering the Nittany Lions from reporter Ben Jones. Lively commentary from columnist Mike Poorman and others. Local perspective, local expertise, local information from Penn State's hometown website, statecollege.com. Trust statecollege.com for daily coverage of the school, team, and place you love.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number three, and that means it's time to Ask Andy. It's where we take your questions. Andy gives us a great response. At the end of the segment, he will pick out the best question. Whoever sent it to us, well, they will win the prize pack from 409tailgateclub.com. And if you want to send a question in to Andy, really easy, just download our app, Keystone Sports. That's it. Search for Keystone Sports. You'll see it there. Download it, and you'll see the button for Ask Andy and Ask T. Frank. Sir, are you ready?
Yep, I'm prepared. Let's go, Jimmy.
All right, let's start with Stan in Nashville, who says, Andy, almost without exception, all the Penn State star players with NFL futures have seen a drop-off from last year's performances. That list includes Nick Singleton, Katron Allen, Fashanu, Theo Johnson, Abdul Carter, and Kalen King. Add to this the fact that both Drew Aller and Keandre Lambert-Smith have fallen short of expectations for this season. How do you possibly explain this?
Did he say Olufashinu? Did he say they played below standards?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, and Katron Allen? He put Katron Allen there. I could say Nick Singleton had a tough year. I agree with that. I also agree in what James Hanklin said last week that he's a better back in many ways, but he just was a different type of better this year. Yeah, and I think the offensive coordinator was probably... Olu, I'm not so sure about that. He was really, really good this year, and I think he only solidified even further his status as one of the elite tackles for this NFL draft. So, I mean, did King, he put King in there? Abdul Carter?
Yep.
Abdul Carter, I think Abdul Carter was used differently, and I think teams were doing things offensively, I saw throughout the season, to sort of target him and maneuver their offense away, not away from him, but they figured out ways to try and work around him. And it became incumbent on Manny to sort of figure out new ways to use him. And I think as the season went along, Manny did that. I still think he was a... He didn't have as many splash plays, but I also think he was a more solid NFL linebacker. And remember, he still got another year. So, man, Stan, you're tough. Stan, you're tough. So I disagree across the board.
I will also point out that this question came in before the Michigan State game. I don't know if that would have changed Stan's mind at all. And what I'll also point out is, any of the players on the offensive side, you know, was it just the system somehow failed the players, I think, more than the players failing the system? And it reflected in some of the numbers for the offensive players. On defense, I think for every player that he names, you've got to look at that defense in totality. If you think that Kalen King didn't have as good a year, you also have to point out the year that Johnny Dixon had. You know,
really good.
If you're going to point out Abdul Carter didn't have as many splash plays, you also have to look at what Chop Robinson did. You know, you have to look at KJ Winston and the things he did, and Daquan Hardy. There were so many guys on the defense that contributed. I think that's also going to be part of it when you have so many contributors. There are fewer guys standing out because those splash plays are spread throughout. Some you got to be conscious of Abdul Carter blitzing, and then you have Johnny Dixon coming in from the outside untouched, you know. So there's a lot more going on there. All right, let's move on. Let's get to Charlie in Edwardsville, who says, I look at this season as a lost opportunity. In the Big Ten and nationally, I don't believe there are any super teams. if you split with Michigan and Ohio State, this is probably a playoff team. My question to you is, how do you think Penn State would have competed with those teams who are the playoff caliber teams, Georgia, Washington, Florida State, or you could add Texas, Oregon, and Alabama?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Charlie. I like the phrase you use, Charlie, lost opportunity. I think that fits more than anything else. This was a lost opportunity for this team. And, you know, how would they play against those? There isn't a clear hammer this year. That is another good piece of analysis. There isn't a clear, like, you know, what is somebody going to have to do to beat or compete with Georgia and beat Georgia, or, you know, beat Michigan. What's somebody, there isn't a clear cut, like, at the top level that one's clearly a fabric above everybody else. How would Penn State compete? I think it would look a lot like, you know, it would look from a Penn State perspective, you hope it would not look the same offensively, but since their offense is challenged against when the competition is at a next level and it's a little more of a level playing field overall, AKA Michigan and Ohio State, I would expect their defense to absolutely be a factor in those games. And that alone, the way that defense plays and performs against any of those teams, pick one, don't care. They would give Penn State an opportunity to be successful and have a good result against anybody in the country. I'm convicted of that. It's not just something I think. I am fully convicted that defense could compete against any offense in this country and have a say in the outcome in the game. Bar none. Washington, Oregon, give it a shot. Where they would struggle is where teams that are fast and elite defense, a little better defensively, would give their offense trouble. That's where the rubber would meet the road in the games. But they could compete in those games. There's no doubt about it, Jimmy. I still believe that.
I'm with you. I think they would be competitive with any of those teams. I don't think anyone blows them out, again, because of the defense. The big variable will be, obviously, the Penn State offense. And, you know, as Penn State fans, we're all left hanging with the question, did something happen with the change when Mike Yurcich left? Did they find something that if they had the do-over against Michigan and Ohio State, would the offense look different? We'll never know. But it does have a little bit of the same feel. Remember a year ago how well they played late in the season and then in the bowl game against Utah?
Yeah.
I want to see that again in a bowl game. And my question is, did that offense turn a corner, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, it's clear, Jimmy, that there was a disconnect of a Mississippi River wide, you know, birth of what was the intention, the plan, and purpose of this offense with Mike Yurcich as a coordinator, and what James Franklin want, because the product on the field looked quasi-dysfunctional for a long time, Jimmy, right? You know, they were still scoring some points. You can't take Delaware, Illinois, that often, you know, go back to the Northwestern game, Indiana, right? There were, you know, Ohio State, Michigan. There was a long period of time where that offense looked very, very out of sorts. So it's a valid point. I think they were poorly coordinated more than anything else.
Okay, let's get to Steve, our good friend from Columbia, who says, Andy and Jim, season's over, and now practically every team not undefeated has their fan base screaming or on social media demanding the coach or multiple coaches be fired. The days of having kids in a program for 4 or 5 years are pretty much done. So with right. NIL and transfer portal, kids are forced or demand to play, even though they may not be ready. The coach then gets blamed for the mistakes made by kids only a year or two out of high school. Any suggestions to address this situation, or is this just where we are?
Yeah, this is where we are. I mean, I like the transfer portal. because it gives players opportunity, but it's also sort of, you know, it has removed one level of power from the college football coaches and the leaders of programs. It's, you know, there's a little bit more power in the hands of the players. They control their destiny a little bit more, and they get to make their own choices. Before, they didn't have any choices. So that's a little bit of removal. I just think it's where we are. It's a relevant question. And, you know, change and turnover are more, how you manage that and how you handle it are more important than anything as a college football staff moving forward in the future. It's how you adapt and move with changes, because there's going to be a lot of them.
Andy, I agree with you, and I both agree and disagree with Steve and his premise. Yes, there is that kind of situation that he pointed out, but I think it can be managed, and I think we could look at our very own Nittany Lions and see some of it. Some of it is these players come out of high school much better prepared for the collegiate game than they were years ago. Between the camps and the training, and the high school training is so much better than it used to be. These camps that they go to, the workout regimen, they come in better prepared. The second part to this is there still can be development done, and you do see that with some – and I'll point out a couple of the players. This Penn State defense is like exhibit A of the right way to do things, because you don't just have those superstars. I'm going to point to guys like, I think Kobe King is a great example. He played a year ago. He was an okay player, but I think he's a much better player this year. You see the development there. We see what KJ Winston has become. After a freshman year, he's a star. It took 1 year, and to throw in the transfer portal, to your point, let's look at Chop Robinson, who was probably misused by Maryland. He wasn't used in the correct way. He had the opportunity to move in, and heck, he's now a superstar, Andy. So I think the same things that are called negatives could also be positives. I'll give you the last word, plus you need to give us a winner, Andy.
Real quick, I throw Adisa Isaac in there. Talent development still matters. Remember what Colorado did this year with 80 or, you know, however many transfers they got, 4-8. Remember that and go in transfer portal. Charlie in Edwardsville, good question and lost opportunity. Great phrase. You're our winner this week.
All right. Very good. With Charlie as our winner. Also, remember, stick around quarter number four. We got Sean Golden for Sean's take. He's going to tell us who's going to be winning those conference championship games that are upcoming this weekend. Stay tuned. This is Jim from the Keystone Sports Network. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all our loyal listeners. As we approach the football offseason, a reminder that we will be here year-round talking Penn State football with all your old favorites, Dustin, T-Frank, Andy, and Jeff, along with newcomers Landon and Sean. But that's not all. We plan on bringing you new shows on our podcast format where we take a more in-depth look at not only Penn State football, but also the other Penn State sports. So be sure to download our app, Keystone Sports.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
StateCollege.com is your one-stop source for news, sports, opinion, entertainment, and community events. Over a decade of experience covering the Nittany Lions from reporter Ben Jones. lively commentary from columnist Mike Poorman and others. Local perspective, local expertise, local information from Penn State's hometown website, statecollege.com. Trust statecollege.com for daily coverage of the school, team, and place you love.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold. And it's time for Sean's Take. Sean's going to take a look this week at all of the conference championship games. And he's going to pick some winners for us. It's going to be a fun week, isn't it, Sean?
It is. There's a lot of big-time matchups here. It's championship football, playoff implications on the line. I'm excited for it.
I am, too. And it was just today that I went and looked up the spreads on these games. And a couple of them are a little bit surprising to me. You know, how often do you get an undefeated Power 5 team, and I'm speaking of Washington here, from a very good Pac-12 conference this year? Washington was undefeated through the season. They beat Oregon, their opponent, in this conference championship game. And they're a 9.5-point underdog, Sean.
You know, I thought with how things have gone recently, Oregon would be favored in this game. But I was thinking maybe a 2.5-point favorite would be the line. It's just a matter of fact for Washington is the past 6 weeks, since Washington beat Oregon at home, they have not beaten somebody by more than 10 points, and that's very concerning when you're going in against a very hot Oregon team. And we know on the show all year long, when we talk about Oregon, I would say I have a feeling they're going to find their way into the playoffs. And now when it's time to make a prediction and when we're looking at this line, I have to be questioning, have we all, and myself included, been writing Washington off too much? The spread is pretty big, and maybe it's just a team for Washington that they need the big stage in order to perform their best. A lot of teams, when you're playing teams like Arizona State, who, you know, comparative to Washington, was not a very good team this year, they take their foot off the gas a little bit too much, but then when the lights are brightest, they'll come in and show out. So at first, I was all over Oregon. The past couple weeks when, you know, we could predict this was going to be the championship game, I was like, I'll take Oregon. And now I'm wondering if this spread is a little too overcorrected and if Washington still is a really, really good team that just hasn't had to play really, really good because they knew they would pick up wins. And with that, I do think Oregon should still win this game, but I think I cannot write Washington off. So with the 9.5 line, I'm going to go plus 9.5 for Washington and say that they do keep this thing close, and this should be a very good game.
I understand that, and I think I'm with you on this one too, Sean. But both those offenses, they have the capability of putting up a lot of points. We saw that when they played each other. I could see this being one of those close games. Maybe Oregon's up by a field goal late in the game, turnover, something happens, Oregon gets that late touchdown, and that 9.5 points comes back to bite you. I could see a very close game and Oregon still winning by 10 points. However, I'm actually with you on this. I think 9.5 points is just too much. And I think Michael Penix is one of those gamer-type players. When it's a big game, Penn State fans know all too well what he can do to you. Okay, let's move on. Let's go to the Big 12. And that's Texas versus Oklahoma State. For weeks, we had been anticipating a Texas-Oklahoma rematch here, just like Washington-Oregon is a rematch. Not to be. Oklahoma State, they beat Oklahoma. They had a late comeback last week to sneak in here. They are going to be up against Texas, but Texas is a 15.5-point favorite, Sean.
It is a big line, and I got to say the time is finally here where Texas actually has a realistic shot of going to the college football playoffs. Every year, preseason polls, this is Texas's year, and they fall short. This time, it's right there for them. If they get a win here and maybe one or two teams lose or have a close victory, and you know they may find their way into that four-team playoff. What I think is very interesting about this matchup against Oklahoma State And to be completely honest with you, when I saw this line, immediately I was jumping onto Oklahoma State until I saw this one point. Oklahoma State on the season only has 13 total passing touchdowns. That's concerning when Texas's best attribute is their run defense. So the majority of Oklahoma State points have come through the ground game, and that's what Texas does a really good job of shutting down. So when I saw that, I jumped back to Texas. I think they're going to work to force Oklahoma State to pass the ball, and I don't have enough faith that the passing attack will deliver against Texas. So I think it may finally be the year that Texas sets themselves up for a playoff appearance, and I like them to put this one in the hands of the committee and say, hey, we did what we were supposed to do. We got a big win in the Big 12 championship game. It's now up to you. And I think Texas will do that. So give me Texas minus 15.5 here.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what. It's the permutation that I think the committee absolutely dreads is Alabama beating Georgia. So both those teams will be one-loss teams. And Texas winning, they would be a one-loss team. And if you have to pick among those three teams, that would be very tough. And God forbid Oregon beats Washington, you'll have two more one-loss teams to throw into the mix also. So anyway, I mentioned Georgia-Alabama. Georgia is a 5.5-point favorite over Alabama. I think there was a time early in the season where I would jump all over Georgia as a 5.5-point favorite against Alabama. Alabama did not look so good in that loss to Texas, a couple wins they had early. But, Sean, they have found ways to win. And if you saw the end of that Alabama-Auburn game, you know they really, really found a miracle way to win that one. How do you see this one with Georgia, the 5.5-point favorite?
Well, all of the stars aligned for us to get this big Alabama-Georgia matchup that we've been looking for all year long. And if you go back to last season, I said at the time of the playoff selection that while Alabama didn't get into the playoffs, I thought they were the only team in the country that had a shot at beating Georgia. So I know Alabama last year feels like they got snubbed from the playoffs, and they felt like they could have been national champions if they did get into the playoffs. So I think they're a really dangerous team right now, especially with how the Iron Bowl ended. Like I said, the stars are aligning in weird ways. That's how college football works sometimes. And it's not the best Alabama team we've ever seen, but this also isn't the best Georgia team that we've seen. So I think weird things can happen in an Alabama-Georgia matchup. And with that, I'm going to say Roll Tide, and I'm going to take Bama to cover this big-time matchup.
That is going to be an interesting game. I think it's between Oregon, Washington, and Georgia, Alabama, I think, as the two games I'm saying I am most interested in watching. That would be an interesting one. I do believe you're right. It's not the best Georgia team, but I think that they're good enough. They know what it takes to win. They've done it the last couple years. It'd be different if this were one of Alabama's better teams, but it's not. So I'm going Georgia on that one. Let's go to the game that has the closest spread, and this is an interesting one. It's Louisville and Florida State in the ACC. It's amazing. There's no Clemson in this game. And, you know, Louisville, they had a big win against Notre Dame, so there's some thought they have the capabilities, more so because Florida State's starting quarterback is out injured. That's what makes this one a little more intriguing. Florida State is just a 2.5-point favorite in this one.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the loss of Jordan Travis for Florida State really, really hurts. And Florida State came through for me last week against Florida when we had predicted that. I said I think they'll find a way without him. But I just have too many worries, and I do think Louisville is a pretty dangerous team. They may not always be the most consistent, but like you said, they beat Notre Dame. They had a good win. I think it was at Miami they got a big win, which is a hard place to get a win at. And it's a championship game. You know they're going to come in trying to dethrone Florida State's perfect season, and that's a lot of motivation right there alone. So I think the Cardinals have shown they can beat good teams, and I think they're going to end what should have been a really magical season for Florida State. If Jordan Travis was playing in this game, I'd be on Florida State all day. But his absence is too much for me to overcome right now, and I really do think that Louisville has a chance to pull off the upset here. So when we're picking against the spread, I'll take Louisville plus 2.5.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, if Jordan Travis were there, this spread would probably be a lot different. That brings us to the Big Ten. Crazy matchup. This is Michigan and Iowa. And Penn State, considered the third best team in the East Division, routed Iowa. I think shut them out. I believe it was 31-0. So this one, you get a two-loss Iowa team, but they are currently a 22-point underdog. And that line has moved already within this week. It was 24 points, now at 22. Is that Iowa money coming in, or is it just people thinking, well, Iowa will get shut out, but they're just not going to allow that many points to Michigan?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting, because I think on one hand you have kind of this is a Big Ten championship game, anything can happen, weird things happen in championship games type of, you know, theory, but all year we've talked about how Iowa just cannot score the ball, and I think that's too much for them to overcome. Their defense is good, but as you mentioned, when they played Penn State, the only really good team they played this year, they gave up 31 points. That means Michigan should be able to score at least 31 points if we use that logic, and it doesn't line up exactly like that, but I think Michigan is ready to roll. I think they expect to be in the playoffs. They get Harbaugh back, and, you know, whether you agree or disagree with everything that's happened with Michigan this year, one thing that is undeniable is they have taken the narrative and really used it for momentum purposes. And they're hot right now. They're hungry. Minus 22, I don't really think it's that big of a line for how bad Iowa's offense has been. I don't think they're going to score anything. Let's say they should score less than 10 points if they even score this game. And Michigan can probably score 30 in this one. So give me Michigan minus 22 to get in the playoffs.
I think so, too. I think that Iowa offense is historically bad. And just to put the exclamation point on how bad they are, there are places you could place a bet on a team, how many points a team will score, say, in the first half of the game or the second half of the game. The over-under for Iowa, you could take the bet of them scoring more than half a point in the first half, which just translates to the thought is Michigan will shut them out. So for your last pick, how are you picking? Is Iowa going to score in the first half, Sean?
I'm going to go with the fact I think they can maybe get a field goal in the first half. So I'll go over half a point. I'm not confident in that. That's my least confident pick I've made today. But I will say that it is the Big Ten championship game. I think they will find a way to get some sort of points. Whether it's a safety, a field goal, or a touchdown, I think they'll be able to find a way to score in the first half.
And it very well might be the defense somehow, either forcing a turnover in plus field position, you know, so that they could kick a field goal. I could see that happening. All right, that is it for our show. That is it for Sean's Take. Thank you all for listening, and join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. This is Jim from the Keystone Sports Network. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all our loyal listeners. As we approach the football offseason, a reminder that we will be here year-round talking Penn State football with all your old favorites, Dustin, T-Frank, Andy, and Jeff, along with newcomers, Landon and Sean. But that's not all. We plan on bringing you new shows on our podcast format where we take a more in-depth look at not only Penn State football, but also the other Penn State sports. So be sure to download our app, Keystone Sports.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
StateCollege.com is your one-stop source for news, sports, opinion, entertainment, and community events. Over a decade of experience covering the Nittany Lions from reporter Ben Jones. Lively commentary from columnist Mike Poorman and others. Local perspective, local expertise, local information from Penn State's hometown website, StateCollege.com. Trust StateCollege.com for daily coverage of the school, team, and place you love.